I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Tonight, as we got to watch football and have kind of a normal meal for our Thursday night because the family comes over this evening. So once I get off the air, then we can start having the turkey and stuff. But overall, I'm not a Dallas Cowboy fan, so anytime the Cowboys lose on Thanksgiving, I have a good day.
That is a beautiful thing to see the Cowboys lose. You know, it's funny, like I'm doing the family thing yesterday with family and friends, and the people that we were at, their house, they decided to go two turkeys, one Cajun rub, the other stuffed with butter and herb, both put on a Traeger wood pellet smoker. And I'm telling you, bro, like I've had fried turkey, I've had it every way. But yesterday, oh my good God. Like I was, dude, when I got home, you know, after the Cowboy game went final and the Egg Bowl was kind of a snooze, bro, I passed out for 90 minutes. I was.
Dude, those Traeger grills are like the new thing. I have not tried a turkey on a Traeger grill yet, but I have heard that it is like a completely different experience. Because normally, so on Wednesday, we did kind of a neighborhood thing, and we had fried turkeys, which is always a good time. And then tonight, we'll have the normal baked turkey that Mom's going to make. But a Traeger turkey sounds like the real way to do it. The problem is those Traeger grills are not cheap.
No, and I can't afford one. It's in a different tax bracket for me, but we were at some people that could afford one.
There you go.
And I'm telling you, man, that was good. All right, Eric Slaughter is the chairman of the board. E, how was your Thanksgiving, bud?
Fellas, I was sitting in the same seat I'm sitting in right now, but I still had a thankful one. I had, you know, plenty to be thankful for. So, am I hearing this? Are you in Texas?
I am in Texas right now. Yeah, I'm back home at the old parents' house. So we are long flight on Wednesday. We fly back Sunday morning.
Well, I'm glad you are working from Texas. I get to head to Baltimore in the morning, so I'll get some of that mom's home cooking tomorrow.
There you go. So all of us are staggered. Nick did his yesterday. I do mine tonight, and you do yours tomorrow.
There you go. It's the way to go about it when you're doing shows in and around the holidays. And we got a lot to get to today, guys. We're going to go behind enemy lines. We got a good Jaguars guest coming up this hour. We'll talk some Falcons with David Walker from the Falcoholic in hour two. Braden Gall from Athlon Sports in hour three on all the college football. We're with you till 7 o'clock tonight. Phone number, as always, 404-741-0929. That, of course, our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. You can get Thomas on Twitter at RealThomasMont. I am at Nick929. ATL. So let's hit on the football games from yesterday. I got to tell you, man, and this is not a original take by any stretch, and I'm probably just, you know, throwing into the wind here because it's never going to change. But I'm telling you, yesterday, Thomas, I was with two individuals in a house of over 20 people. One was from the suburbs of Chicago. The other was from, I think, upstate Michigan, not in Detroit, but somewhere in the state of Michigan. And even those two individuals had no interest in watching the Bears and the Lions. It was brutal.
I feel like we've gotten to this point in the NFL season where if your team, you've watched them enough, you know if they're going to be good or not. Like, obviously, if you're a Bills fan yesterday, you're a Cowboy fan or a Raider fan yesterday, that's an important game because you're battling, you know, for the number one seed in the AFC, or you're battling for the NFC East, or you're a Raider battling in the NFC West. But if you're a Bear or a Lion fan, what are you really watching for? If you're a Lion fan, what is there in yesterday's game that gets you excited? Because Jared Goff's not the quarterback of the future. They have very little talent. Are you watching Penei Sewell at right tackle the entire day trying to find something positive? Because at 0-10, they're obviously eliminated. They're going to have the first overall draft pick. We're at that time, Nick, where if your team's not playing well, and we start to see this with the Atlanta Falcons, we hate to admit it, people start to check out. I mean, the Bears didn't even have Justin Fields in there. You would at least have Justin Fields to get excited about for the future, but watching Andy Dalton have to lead you on a game-winning drive to be able to beat the Lions is it's rough football, man. I can't imagine being a Detroit Lions fan my entire life. Like, that is just so unfair.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Nagy fighting for his job, Allen Robinson, Justin Fields out. You get Dalton. And then on the other side, you got the 0-9-1 Lions with Jared Goff, who I guess technically an upgrade over Tim Boyle or Tim Broyle, Joe Broyle, whoever the hell that guy is. But I'm just thinking, like, why does the NFL continue to subject the United States of America to the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving? Like, I don't know anybody in Detroit that actually cares about that team anymore. And it's just one of these things where I'm like, they must get ratings because everybody's just gathered around their TV. But, you know, I'm just at the point now where, like, can't we just break up this bad tradition? Because it's a tough watch.
The NFL draft was in New York for years, and they started to rotate it and went to Philadelphia. And then they went to, or they were going to go to Vegas, went to Dallas, and it's worked out well. I mean, why not at least take a risk at throwing the Steelers on there or throw Tom Brady on Thursday for Thanksgiving? Like, there are plenty of organizations that would have, you know, a much higher draw, if not all the organizations, instead of the Lions. When was the last time the Lions were in the playoff hunt this time of the year around Thanksgiving? Like, maybe that one year that the quarterback, yeah, maybe, or it was what, 2013, 2014, whenever they lost to the Cowboys in the wild card round. So maybe one year with Stafford, right?
I mean, they've retired Barry Sanders in their prime. They retired Megatron in their prime. You know, to pull a Carl Weathers, they're retiring more people than Social Security. It's just brutal. But it is Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Nick Cale, Thomas Mott in for the guys today. The second game yesterday, clearly the most compelling NFL game. Raiders, Cowboys. Cowboys without a slew of weapons. I thought Vegas was kind of like a dead man walking. They had lost a few in a row. You know, I think maybe the buzz of losing Gruden and rallying for their team and their players was starting to wear off. And they go into Dallas, Thomas, yesterday in a shootout, and they get it done with a Carlson field goal in overtime.
Well, it's an important win, too, because as you currently sit, they are not even in the playoffs at 6-5. Like, the NFC is loaded kind of top-heavy. There are four or five teams that are really good and then a bunch of very mediocre football teams. Your seventh seed in the NFC is the Chargers at 6-4. Your eighth seed is Pittsburgh. Your ninth seed is the Colts at 6-5, and then the Raiders at 6-5. And so we talk about teams being alive for the postseason. That almost felt like a must-win for the Raiders. Like, obviously, it's not, because you could still lose and there's 7 weeks left, 6 weeks left, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But they are fighting for their lives right now, especially in the division now that Kansas City is hot. Denver is playing good football. That is not an easy division that you're going to have to play in the rest of the way. And currently, the Raiders, even with the win yesterday, like we just said, are still out of the postseason. So, one, great for them. Two, I don't know where you're at on the Dallas Cowboys right now, Nick. I know that you mentioned that they obviously had, you know, no CeeDee Lamb, no Amari Cooper. He was out with COVID. So Dak was missing weapons. But Dallas has lost three of their last four. And they have an interesting schedule over the next 6 weeks that concludes with them on the road in Philadelphia. Philadelphia was cold at the start. They're now won three of their last four. The NFC East, which seemingly was Dallas and nobody else, that loss yesterday has really opened things up for the Eagles to climb. And if anything, if Philadelphia doesn't, the Cowboys might start coming back down the ladder on the NFC playoff rankings. They might be a fourth seed instead of being a little higher up there at the three or even a two.
Yeah, I mean, their stock is going down right now, even though Dak's putting up big numbers without some of his weapons. That NFC East championship game could be a de facto championship game, I think, when the Eagles and Cowboys play the final week of the season. I tell you, you know, and we'll do more on this in the Falcons report coming up at 5 o'clock today, but I'm sitting there last night around dinner time, and I'm like, I'm watching Micah Parsons, I'm watching DeSean Jackson, and I'm thinking, you know, you can make the argument, you can make the case, we could have had both, one in the draft and one a few weeks ago when there was a wide receiver on the open market and we're looking for a guy to stretch the field with Matt. We'll get into that coming up in the Falcons report, but that thought entered my head for sure. But at least we capped it off with a night where, you know, if from a Falcons standpoint, a good win, because the Bills went in and took care of business against another team without a ton of weapons, all of their guys out. And, dude, I don't know about you, but watching Trevor Siemian was pretty painful last night.
He was, it was a little surprising because the last 2 weeks he's been terrible, but three weeks ago he was at home beating Tom Brady and the Bucks and threw three touchdowns in doing so. It's like this sometimes happens with backup quarterbacks where they kind of get thrust into the spotlight and they're like, oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter if I win or I lose. I'm only going to be here for one game, and they play well. But once you have a backup quarterback have to start consecutive game after consecutive game, that's what they're doing right now in New Orleans. You start to kind of see, oh yeah, Trevor Siemian is a backup for a reason. The crazy thing that I almost forgot, and they reminded me during the broadcast, Simeon was the Bronco replacement when they let go of Peyton Manning, or when Peyton Manning retired. Like, that was their option, their best choice, I guess, because they didn't draft anybody. Trevor Siemian replaced Peyton Manning, and you kind of go, oh, yeah, that's exactly why John Elway up there in Denver has never been able to figure it out. But I think the Saints are a dead man walking. They are defensively, they're not as strong as they should be. The pass rush really isn't there. With both their running backs out, they have no running game, and they really don't have a wide receiver now that Michael Thomas is going to miss basically the entire year. Worth noticing when you throw in a third string quarterback, like the Saints at 5-6 to me seem like they're a almost sheer lock to not make the postseason, yet we still have 6 weeks left to go.
Yeah, I mean, I said last night, and I put it out on Twitter, and I was serious. Like, I thought at halftime, Sean Payton should have called up to the booth in NBC and said, Drew Brees, come on down for the second half. I think Drew Brees would have offered more on the field than Trevor Siemian in the second half, and probably would have offered more on the field than he was in the booth last night. Because if you watch the game and you were actually paying attention to the broadcast, like, I genuinely felt bad for Mike Tirico. I mean, NBC has salivated over Brees for years, thinking he would be their Romo. He ain't even close.
Yeah, you start to kind of realize that, you know, hopping on a microphone during an actual play-by-play call is a little bit harder than it looks. You know how Monday Night Football always wanted Peyton Manning, and yet I love the Manning cast. Yet I don't think Peyton Manning would be polished enough to just jump in there and be ready to go as a number two color alongside a guy like Tirico. I mean, it's tough to do, Nick.
It is. Egg Bowl, kind of a blowout last night. Ole Miss rolls. I was hoping that would be the game of the night, but we were sadly disappointed.
Only one big game there for your Thursday night, even though we watched basically all four of them. Because what else are you going to do? It was Thanksgiving. Hope you guys had a great one. We're going to jump into our headlines coming up here in about 6 minutes. It's rivalry weekend in college football. There are a lot of good matchups. We're going to break all those down and more coming up next year as Dukes and Bell rolls on. Thomas Mott, Nick Cale in for the guys on Sports Radio. 90% of the game, streaming live in your pocket on the Odyssey app.
It was nice to meet them, but I hope I never see them.
All right, guys, the race to the college football playoff is on, and every Saturday at 9 o'clock, Chris Goforth, John Chuckery, and Randy McMichael will get you ready for all the big games and the storylines. You're home for the best college football coverage. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and we got you covered tomorrow with a little doubleheader. It is The Game as number 2 Ohio State goes to the Big House to take on number 5 Michigan. Pregame at 11:30, kickoff at 12. And then as soon as that one goes final, we join the Iron Bowl in progress, number 3 Alabama at Auburn. We'll get to some headlines coming up here in a couple of minutes. Falcons Jaguars on Sunday. And Tommy, we're going to have a Jaguars guest on coming up at 2:40 today. We'll give you the details on that. But just kind of quickly, like, if you can't get right this week after the last 2 weeks against the Jags, I don't know when the Falcons will get right, to be honest.
Yeah, you really thought that rock bottom was the past couple of weeks where they scored 3 points in, what, 8 quarters of play, 0 in the last 7. If they can't beat the Jaguars, and I mean, even like a 3-point win on the road against Jacksonville is going to feel like a disappointment. If they can't beat Jacksonville, who, I mean, let's just do a little test at home in your car right now. Name a defensive player on the Jaguars not named Miles Jack right now. Can anyone do it? I don't know if I can.
Josh Allen?
Offensively, okay, yeah, besides Josh Allen, right? How about those two? Besides those two, name another one.
Yeah, that there you go. Now
that's
I'm
it.
Stumped.
And then offensively, I mean, most of them are all out. I don't think I can name an offensive player not named Trevor Lawrence because Travis Etienne is out. I guess you would have to go for Laviska Shenault is the one wide receiver that I can name out of Colorado a couple years ago. Like, the point is they don't have talent. They're not a talented football team. We know this based on watching them play and based on their record. Nick, if the Falcons can't do it on Sunday, I mean, people are going to check out. And I think most people are already checked out, but that'll be like the official check box. I'm checked out if they lose on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a fair point, and I'm not trying to lower the bar. I mean, clearly the goal is to win, and they should win this game. I think the Falcons are actually favored on the road. But, like, I'm just hoping out of the gate that we can look like a functional offense because, I mean, 3 points the last 2 weeks, I get it, good competition. But, I mean, it's 2021 in the NFL. You should still be able to put up some points on the scoreboard regardless if you come away with a W or not.
Well, and at least we are pretty sure that we're going to get Cordarrelle Patterson back, and it seems like the offense without him has been very, very lackluster. What does Kadri Allison have? I mean, he had some nice runs. Arthur Smith called it physical in terms of running the football at times. They were, you know, not a lot of runs, but they were at times against the Patriot defense. But I think that this is going to be hopefully a get-right game and hopefully a game that kind of gets the offense rolling again. But as we just mentioned, if they're unable to do so against the Jags, If not now, then when? Like, in all seriousness, if they can't move the football against the Jaguar defense, what happens next week against Tampa Bay? I mean, and then Carolina, and the 49ers are playing good. And then you got Buffalo 2 weeks after that. I mean, this team was, we understood that they weren't going to be anything incredibly special this year, but they were at least 3 weeks ago beating the Saints on the road. And I think I went on the air on the Falcon Flyover, the postgame show on Sundays, and said, listen, this team, if they keep doing this, can be a playoff team. And then since then, it's been, you know, not just rock bottom, but below. And so I think the point, as we just mentioned, if not the Jags, Nick, then who?
Yep, totally agree. All right, we'll go behind enemy lines with a Jaguars guest coming up in about 20 minutes. It's Dukes and Bell here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Nick Kale, Thomas Mott in for Carl and Mike. Eric Slaughter is the producer today. E, let's hit some headlines.
Strap in, youngins. Hitting the headlines with Dukes and Bell.
All right, guys, let's hit some headlines. We'll get to all the big college football, including some clean old-fashioned hate and the Iron Bowl and the big game as well. But let's start with the Hawks tonight, who are on the road. Tip-off shortly after 8 o'clock tonight here on 92.9 The Game as they take on the Grizzlies. And, Thomas, I don't know how many grown men are checking NBA standings in the month of November, but if you looked at it a few days ago, before this team started to get right again, we were like the 12th seed in the Eastern Conference. Now, all of a sudden, working our way back into playoff contention here on Thanksgiving weekend, and it should be a good one because you get Trey and you get Ja Morant.
Well, and you get them with a chance to, I mean, what is it, 7 in a row, 8 in a row? I think it'll be 7 in a row because they've won 6 so far. And so a chance for them to, like you said, continue to climb up in the standings. I don't think anyone panicked early on if you were following the Hawks. You mentioned that for a lot of, you know, average NBA fans, you don't really check in until after Christmas is kind of when you start to really dive into these things. But if you're a diehard Hawks fan, then you were very, I would say, at least intrigued, maybe nervous by that 7-game losing streak because they were losing to all these teams that you would meet in the postseason if you were on the Western Conference side. Jazz, Suns, Warriors, Jazz again, and then the Nuggets. They've gotten right, Nick. They're playing good basketball. And this, like you said, a fun matchup against Ja Morant, but also a matchup that matters going forward. And so even though we're 20 games into the NBA season, I think that the Hawks are starting to kind of get to where we thought they would be the first couple of weeks. And it only took them, 3 weeks to get to this point. I think the fun is happening and is yet to come as well.
Got a victory on the road on Wednesday evening against the Spurs. Let's hear from our head coach, Nate McMillan, talking about this team starting a positive trend on the road.
Well, it's one game, but we certainly hope so. You know, I just like the mindset that our guys have had really the last couple of days. I feel like our practices, we've been focused on what we need to do, what we need to clean up.
And look, this is, you know, Nate's always been one of these guys, Thomas, that, you know, preaches about staying connected. But it is a mindset because, you know, we mentioned this all, you know, the first 16 games of the season. Like, teams are going to give the Hawks their best effort because of what they did last year in the month of June and July. So they ain't catching people by surprise. They better bring their A game on a nightly basis, and they're starting to do that on the road.
Yeah, and a big factor is the play of the two players that we thought would have a massive impact in their potential run deep into the postseason this year. It's Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter, both of which did really struggle early on. Now, Hunter didn't play yesterday, but Reddish did. He had 12 points coming off the bench. I remember watching the Hawks during that 7-game losing streak, and it was like Reddish would have 4 points. Remember one night, I think it was against the Jazz, Hunter had 2. It was like, okay, wait a second. These guys are supposed to be not 25 to 30-point scorers a night, but they're supposed to be at least be in the low teens. And that was a big impact when they weren't able to score that much coming off the bench. And now that you have a guy like Cam Reddish coming off the bench a couple nights ago, or what is it, last night against the Spurs, 22 minutes, 12 points, that's been a big difference maker in the Hawks' run here. And I think, like you said, it's just a matter of a little bit of get some continuity going, getting rolling here. The slow start, the expectations were a little bit high. I think that they're looking good. I mean, 124 to 106. The Spurs aren't great. Like, they're a 4-win basketball team, but that's what the Hawks should be doing against these bad basketball teams every single night. You should not be in close games as they had been, or at least losing those games early on.
100%. Totally agree. Hawks Grizzlies tonight, 8 o'clock, pregame at 7:30, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Dukes and Bell here on a Black Friday. Nick and Thomas in for the fellas today. All right, let's get to all the college football. We'll do a big chunk of college football coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, including in our Dogs Report. But we have clean old-fashioned hate tomorrow, Georgia and Georgia Tech. The Dogs, about a 35-point favorite. I'll tell you right now, Thomas, for me, this is, number one, don't be thinking ahead to Alabama. Go in with your mind right. Blow Georgia Tech out in the first 30 minutes. Get yourself like a 31-0 lead. And if I'm Kirby, I mean, I'm resting my guys in the second half if I have that lead.
I'm too. I'm throwing JT Daniels in there and letting him kind of get a little more warmed up, a couple more reps. I know people are wondering what's going to happen if, for heaven forbid, Stetson Bennett struggles. That's why I would go ahead and throw Daniels in there for at least the second half. I'm surprised it's only a 34-point line here in terms of Georgia. I think this is going to be an absolute, I mean, demolishing. This is not a Georgia Tech football team that we talk a lot about here at the station that had the year that was expected. I mean, you're coming into year three of Jeff Collins. You thought they'd be a lot better than 3-8. They played a brutal schedule, which, of course, you know, the Notre Dame loss really emphasized that, and then Georgia the following week. But right. They shouldn't be close. They should be able to roll. And in a weekend of rivalry games, I hate to admit it, but unless you're a diehard Dogs fan, this is not one that you worry about turning on because there are a lot of other really good games happening in that exact same time slot.
That is correct. Let's hear from the coaches. We'll get to Kirby in a moment. You just alluded to Jeff Collins. Let's hear from the Georgia Tech head coach acknowledging the fans that are actually really frustrated.
I get it. Right? I understand it. I'm frustrated. I'm as big of a competitor as there is in the game. And, you know, so I'm frustrated. Even though we've made progress, it's still not, hasn't shown up in the win column where we want it to be and where we need it to be and where it will be. But I completely get the frustration, and I understand and just know that there's nobody that is more focused on fixing it, keeping us moving forward than myself.
I would tell you this, Thomas. I don't know that he definitely gets fired, but I would definitely say he's on the hot seat. You look at his win totals over the last couple of years, I'm just not seeing the progression or the development with the program.
Yeah, it's tough because on one end, you look at the fact that they played, what is it, 3, 4, 5 ranked teams this year, and a lot of teams that were ranked and then weren't ranked by the time that they got to them. But you had to play Clemson early on. You played UNC. That was a nice win for them. But then the Notre Dame last week, you didn't score a point. And it's like, you know, you got to at least be able to give me something here. And progression is the key word that you just mentioned. You didn't have to come out here and win 7 games this year to have a successful season. You had to come out here and show that you were better than you were last year and that things were looking ahead and looking at least like they were going to eventually be competitive in the ACC. And 3 wins this year, they're not going to win one on Saturday. They'll be 3-9. And then what, is that 7th in the ACC, 6th in the Coastal? It's just one of those years where now that they aren't running the triple option as well, they could easily plug and play a new head coach who wants to spread you out and throw the football, because most coaches do. I like Jeff Collins. I've met him before, and he's a great guy. Really nice to me in person. I want him to be successful. But if they don't score a single point against Georgia, which is tough to do, maybe the booster's there. You know, if someone's got some deep pockets, get them on a buyout and go try and reset, because we're in year 3 now. And by year 3, you got to at least have close to a .500 record.
All right, we know the Dogs are going big game hunting. They got much more bigger prey on their mind than the Yellow Jackets, most notably Alabama, Nick Saban, and the Crimson Tide. But Kirby Smart says, you know what, we're not going to overlook Tech.
That doesn't concern me. Our guys have been very mature and handled things really well. We challenged them after the game the other day to come out and approach this thing with a will-not-be-denied attitude. We're going out to go play our best game. That's our goal, play our best game of the season. How do we do that? We usually do it by practicing well.
And I'll tell you this, Thomas, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Georgia Tech. I think this is just a fact. This is just the reality of the situation. But if Georgia comes in with the right mindset, handles their business in the first 30 minutes tomorrow, and they go to intermission, they're up 35-0, 31-3, whatever it might be, I genuinely think that lead can increase in the second half, because I think Georgia's second unit would probably be a 2-touchdown favorite over Tech.
Yeah, easily. I mean, this is going to be honestly done by probably the first quarter, which has been kind of the theme for every single Georgia game. I remember each and every week I would come on the air on my Saturday morning show, Ready or Bot, and I'd be like, okay, who does Georgia play today? Florida. Oh, well, you know, maybe this is the week that Georgia struggles, and then, you know, Arkansas, and then it was Auburn. It was like, maybe this is the week. No, it's always by the end of the first half. They're always rolling. They're always up big. The defense has given up, you know, very few yards, if any, total points. And Tech's going to be just, it's not going to be pretty. You got to roll them. You got to get it done. And then the real question is going to be how Kirby handles the next couple of weeks getting ready for the SEC title game, because they'll play Bama. That's when you start to kind of hear him. You heard him in that little audio bit, you know, practicing right and getting yourselves right. It's not this week that matters. It's the next couple of weeks that matter, because that game is going to be the biggest game of Kirby Smart's career, and he's played in an SEC, and he's played obviously in a national championship as well.
Yep.
The big one for me, though, and I'll be honest, this is the one that I am going to watch over Georgia Tech, is obviously Ohio State and Michigan. We'll talk a lot more about that game coming up here a little bit later on. We do, though, have to go to break and get into the Jacksonville Jaguars taking on our Atlanta Falcons. We're going to go out to the waitboard.com hotline and talk to Ryan Green down there at Jacksonville Sports Radio and ESPN 92.5 down there in Jacksonville to preview Falcons and Jaguars from the enemy's perspective. This is Thomas Mott, Nick Cale in for Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio, 9th in the game, 9thinthegame.com.
All right, guys, welcome back in. Black Friday edition of Dukes and Bell. Nick Cale and Thomas Mott in for Carl and Mike today. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We hang out till 7 o'clock. We got our NFL Blitz coming up in about 18 minutes. But right now, let's go behind enemy lines as we fire up the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. And we welcome in Ryan, the Hacker Green from 1010XL Jacksonville Sports Radio for a little preview on our Falcons opponent, the Jaguars, this Sunday. Ryan, we appreciate it, man. Happy Thanksgiving. How you doing, bud?
Nick, Thomas, I'm good, guys. How are you?
We are doing well. You know, it's funny. You know, we've had our own quarterback issues this year at times with Matt Ryan. But, you know, I'm reading this from afar and just gathering stuff on social media and, you know, trying to stay up on Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence. And I hear all this stuff about, you know, some disagreement within the organization about how to continue Trevor's development. Is there anything to that? And what exactly is going on with the prized rookie quarterback?
Well, there's a lot of frustration around here, as you can imagine. 2-8 is 2-8, coming off a 1-15 season last year. It's obvious the Jaguars had far more issues than just that of quarterback. I think Trevor Lawrence has played pretty well to this point, all things considering, but he doesn't have a lot of talent around him. James Robinson, the best player on the offense, has been banged up for the last month now, basically. I mean, do you want to know the status of the Jaguar roster? They trade for Dan Arnold, a tight end from Carolina, week 3 of the season, and he's probably their best down-the-field weapon right now, a guy that wasn't even here 6 weeks ago. So that's all you really need to know about the wide receiver position, the tight end position. There's just not a lot for Trevor to work with. So there's some frustration. Certainly we would love to see him have a season that Justin Herbert had a year ago, but he doesn't have Keenan Allen or Austin Ekeler or Mike Williams on his roster. He has a 31-year-old Marvin Jones, an underperforming Laviska Shenault, and Dan Arnold. And that's what you have. That's reality. And the Jaguars are paying the consequences because of it.
I'm curious how Jaguar fans view Urban Meyer, because obviously us here in Atlanta, we watch from afar like the rest of the National Football League, and all we see is one losing, and then of course the controversy of not flying back with the team, and then the whole bar incident that everyone saw on ESPN a couple of weeks ago. Do Jaguar fans want this guy fired at the end of the year, or do you guys see it as a slow build where you want him to be with the quarterback for the next couple of years and eventually figure things out in Jacksonville? What's your take right now on Urban Meyer?
I don't think Jaguar fans want Urban Meyer fired necessarily. Are they disappointed with year number one? Of course. Are they disappointed by the embarrassing story that came out of the state of Ohio, about a month and a half ago? Absolutely. But have him fired? No, I still think there's optimism that Urban can be the guy. I'll tell you this, there's not a lot of optimism in the offensive coaches he assembled on his staff. I think offensive coordinator Darrell Bevell, passing game coordinator Brian Schottenheimer, basically that entire offensive coaching staff may be in significant trouble once the season comes to an end. But as far as Jaguar fans, at least the ones that call our show, I think Urban is disappointing them, but to the point they want him fired, no, I don't think we're there yet.
Ryan Green joining us here as we go behind enemy lines, get a little preview on the Jaguars, joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. You know, when you look about the, you know, the offensive staff, and you mentioned Daryl Bevel, well, I here's a solution. And I'm just throwing stuff at the wall, seeing if it sticks. You tell me if there's any chance it would happen. But Dan Mullen is no longer the Gators head coach. He used to work with Urban. They were great together with Tebow. They've got Trevor Lawrence. Does Dan Mullen make sense next year as an NFL OC with Urban and Trevor?
Oh, I absolutely think it makes sense. The question is, would Dan Mullen want to do that? Will Dan Mullen be in play for any head coaching opening, say at a Virginia Tech or something like that? Or does he want to go to the National Football League? And if he wants to go to the National Football League, it'd be a nice little 90-minute drive up to Jacksonville to rejoin Urban Meyer and become the offensive coordinator here with the Jaguars. Look, I think Dan Mullen, X's and O's wise, is still a very, very good coach. He was a bad to terrible recruiter. Kirby Smart is scorching the earth in Athens, just doing laps around Dan Mullen. So from that standpoint, I'm happy the Gators are moving on from him. X's and O's wise, I really like what Dan Mullen could potentially bring to the table for a guy like Trevor Lawrence. So yeah, there's no question that that is something that's been discussed here in Jacksonville. I know Urban has just talked with Dan as far as when he got fired. There was some text messages exchanged because they're still pretty cordial with one another, as you can imagine. So yeah, I mean, it does not take a long time to connect the dots where if there is an opening here, Dan Mullen's available, that might be a pretty good fit to the puzzle.
I'm curious how Jaguar fans are viewing this matchup against the Falcons on Saturday. Because a little insight into how Atlanta fans see this. Atlanta fans understand the Falcons are reeling 3 points in the last eight quarters. Like, we've hit rock bottom. But Falcon fans are viewing this week's matchup against a 2-8 Jaguar team as kind of a get-right week, right? It's like, figure things out. You're playing a Jacksonville Jaguar team that has not had a lot of success. They have a ton of points over the past couple of weeks. Atlanta should be able to win. How do Jacksonville Jaguar fans, how do you guys down there in Florida view this Falcon game? Is this kind of a get-right game for you guys? Because we fully understand Atlanta is by no means a juggernaut.
No, there is no such thing as a get-right game when you cover the Jacksonville Jaguars, guys. Since the beginning of 2012, the Jaguars are 41-113.
Jeez.
I mean, honestly, think about that for a second. They're 72 games below 500 in the last 10 years of football. It has been a disaster here, from coaching hires to bad drafts, bad free agents, acquisitions. That's why there was a lot of optimism with Urban and Trevor coming in this year, and I think there is still. But no, despite the fact Atlanta's got outscored, what, like 71-3 in the last two games or whatever it is, there's not a lot of people here picking Jacksonville to win the game, because victories down here are few and far between. They are celebrated like Super Bowl wins. When Jacksonville beat Miami in London, you would have thought we won the Super Bowl. When Jacksonville beat Buffalo 9-6 a few weeks ago, you would have thought we won the Super Bowl. That's how few and far the victories have been here over the last decade.
Ryan, final one for me. You know, I look at this Falcons team, and we're having trouble protecting the quarterback right now in Matt Ryan. You just alluded to that the Jacksonville Jaguars beat the Buffalo Bills. I think that game was 9-6, and it was Josh Allen on Josh Allen crime all day. How do the Falcons go about trying to slow down Josh Allen and that Jacksonville pass rush? Because we haven't been able to protect Matt for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, the frustrations the Jaguars have on offense, guys, the defense has gotten better. The defense was not very good to begin the year, but Joe Cullen, the new DC here in Jacksonville, whatever he's found has worked, because they've been getting to the opposing quarterback. They rattled Josh Allen a few weeks ago. They rattled Carson Wentz. I mean, Indianapolis played out of their minds in Buffalo last week. The week prior, they won a 23-17 hard-fought battle against the Jaguars. The Jaguar defense really hasn't been the problem. The one good thing for you guys is our secondary is really banged up. Shaq Griffin is not going to play, still in the concussion protocol. So I think there will be some opportunities in the passing game. As a Kyle Pitts fantasy owner, I certainly hope there's some opportunities in the passing game. But as far as you guys protecting Matt Ryan, that should be a concern, because the Jaguars front seven has gotten better throughout the year, and they're probably playing their best football here in the month of November. So it should be an interesting battle to see how that works out.
Last one for me here, Ryan, then we'll let you go into the rest of your Black Friday. I'm always fascinated by the NFL draft, and if things keep going in the direction that both of our two teams, the Falcons and Jags, do keep going, and that is losing football games, we're going to be close to each other in the NFL draft, somewhere in the top 10, top 15. If you had to guess right now, where did the Jaguars go with that fourth overall draft pick, sixth overall draft pick? What do you think the Jaguars are going to do?
Best non-quarterback. That's going to be – it could be anything. It could be defensive end, could be linebacker, could be wide receiver, the best non-quarterback. They got the quarterback figured out. They just have very little around him. I'll tell you this, though, honestly, they need probably three new wide receivers, whether that's free agency and the draft, whatever it is. The Jaguars will be big spenders in free agency and the draft on the wide receiver position. I don't know if there's a guy worth a top five pick, but that's going to be a heavily invested market. But, yeah, to answer your question, if they have a top five pick, the best non-quarterback, they'll take anybody. They need help all over the place.
You can follow him on Twitter at RyanGreen1010XL. Ryan Green from Jacksonville Sports Radio, 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Really appreciate the insight, Ryan. Thank you very much. Have a great rest of your holiday.
Hey, guys, anytime. Take care.
You got it. Ryan Green joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. And I would say this, Thomas, like this should be a get-right game for the Falcons. The Jaguars are not a good team. But that being said, they did beat the Buffalo Bills 9-6, and they held Josh Allen to all of 6 points. That says something that the NFL, I mean, the reality is you just don't know. It's truly week to week.
Boy, that interview just put things into perspective to me as a Falcon fan and follower. It could be a lot worse. I mean, they talk about two games this year the Jaguars have won. It's like winning the Super Bowl. 72 games under 500? Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it can always get worse. It can always get worse if you're a Falcon fan right now. We'll get to those Falcons coming up here a little bit later on. Great guest in the 3 o'clock hour. First, though, in about 6 minutes, NFL Blitz. Those Thursday games yesterday, two of the three weren't that competitive, had some very interesting playoff implications. We'll take a look at the NFL playoff picture as we are less than 7 weeks away from the season ending. Also, did Matt Nagy save his job for at least one more week? We'll find out more coming up here in about 6 minutes. NFL Blitz. Dukes and Bell, Thomas Mott, Nick Kale in for Carl and Mike on this Black Friday. Sports Radio 910 The Game, 910thegame.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.